The biggest improvements in health outcomes stem from minimizing unnecessary hospital use. It's all of that that really constitutes accountability and that beneficiaries should want and providers should offer.
Welcome to Off the Chart, a business and medicine podcast featuring lively and informative conversations with healthcare experts, opinion leaders, and practicing physicians about the challenges facing doctors and medical practices. My name is Austin Luttrell. I'm the assistant editor over at Medical Economics, and I hope you all had a great 4th of July weekend. This week's episode, we're diving into Medicare reform with Susan Denser, the president and CEO of America's Physician Groups. We'll be talking about the group's latest report titled Medicare Done Right and what it means for physicians, patients, and the future of accountable care. You can find the full report linked in the show notes down below. Thank you again to Susan for joining us, and now, on to the episode. Susan Denser, thank you so much for joining me today.
Great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So, America's Physician Group's latest report is titled Medicare Done Right. Could you talk about the biggest thing that Medicare is doing wrong today, and what's the most important fix that your report proposes?
So the most important fix would be moving both arms of the program, both the traditional Medicare program as we know it and Medicare Advantage, because there are those two very important parts of the program, moving those into more of a position of accountability, making everybody in those programs, patients, providers, physicians in particular, truly accountable for the costs and quality of the health care that is provided or received by beneficiaries. And even though we've made substantial strides in both arms of the program, and by we, I mean us as Americans, we haven't gone far enough. And really, the fault for that lies, first of all, in all of us, because we are the government, but also our policymakers who have not taken sufficient steps to make those two arms of the program as accountable as they should be.
So the report calls for putting every Medicare beneficiary in an accountable relationship with a healthcare professional. Could you talk about what that means in practice, how realistic that goal is, especially for smaller practices or independent practices?
What it really means, frankly, at the basic level is having a primary care physician or optimally a primary care team that essentially constitutes an individual's medical home. It's the go-to place for, first of all, primary care, that first contact care that is so essential, but also a point of coordination of care across the system. If you talk to anybody with multiple chronic illnesses, seeing lots of providers, they will tell you the most maddening thing of all is the lack of coordination among a very uncoordinated, fragmented system. So having somebody who's sort of in charge of your care, first of all, for that primary care piece, but also coordinating your care across the system, evaluating your various healthcare needs, making sure you've got good referrals to high-value specialists, that you're not just kind of thrown randomly into the system, and most important of all, keeping you as healthy as possible and out of the hospital. Because the research that we've conducted at America's Physician Groups shows that the biggest improvements in health outcomes stem from minimizing unnecessary hospital use, keeping people with chronic illness out of the hospital, preventing them from having unnecessary ED visits, et cetera, et cetera. It's all of that that really constitutes accountability and that beneficiaries should want and providers should offer.
So the report also proposes ending MIPS and rethinking MACRA entirely. Why hasn't the current system worked for physicians, I mean, as it is, and what is the alternative?
So MIPS, of course, was created under the MACRA law that was passed in 2015. And that law was a good start for its time, but it's already 10 years later. The world has changed a lot. And frankly, we've learned a lot, I think, as a nation about how you really get to quality and cost improvements and true accountability. If you look at MIP, what MIPS was, it was essentially an attempt to nudge individual clinicians to greater quality by having them focus in four particular areas of improvement. They could kind of self-select what areas, for example, of quality improvement they wanted to be, in essence, responsible for. And then they would get, relatively speaking, small bonuses if they did a kind of a check-the-box exercise to improve quality of care, for example. That was one piece of MACRA. The other piece was the creation of these advanced alternative payment model bonuses, which would provide initially a 5% bonus on top of the regular Medicare physician fee schedule for providers who had a certain share of their patients in accountable care models or advanced accountable care models, for example, the Medicare Shared Savings Program. So there were these two different pieces of the MACRA law. What we know all these years later is that only about half of clinicians opted into MIPS. It was based on a kind of a flawed assessment of how you get to true quality improvement in the system, which is that you get there by one doc making small changes at a time. And we now know that that's really not the most effective way to engineer better quality. You really need system level reforms across a system, not just one doc at a time. And others besides us, including the Medicare Payment Assessment group, so-called MedPAC, has advised ditching MIPS now for several years because it's not working and it's just not accomplishing the goals. So our argument is, first of all, restore the Advanced Alternative Payment Model bonus, which is now gone. Congress has not renewed it. So there really is nothing now to reward clinicians independently through the Medicare physician fee schedule who are now in those accountable models. We need to restore that. And frankly, we need to expand that and revise the way we give bonuses or incentive payments to clinicians who are enrolled in these accountable models. So these changes are very important and overdue.
A lot of practices that are either smaller or independent, they might be kind of wary of two-sided ACOs. What would you say to physicians who feel these models are just too risky or too complicated for them?
Well, they are risky, and smaller practices are right to be wary of them. I want to distinguish between small and independent, though, because we have a number of independent practices that are large and that are involved in risk models and are doing well in them. So it's not just it's not a function of being independent whether you can or cannot do this. What is the case is that for smaller practices, it is hard, if not impossible, to do it alone. Becoming accountable really means accepting risk. It means being involved in, say, a capitated payment structure or so-called upside and downside risk to essentially competing to be able to meet a particular spending benchmark, potentially win on that and share savings with the government. These are complicated exercises. These are not natural acts for small practices. So you need partners to do that. And those partners can be of various types. You can join a larger organization. You can join a larger ACO, be a practice participating in a bigger ACO, in a big ACO. You can work with any of a number of enabler organizations that are specialized in this area that take on risk. We have a number of groups in California that have addressed this issue by becoming part of independent practice associations or management services organizations. You can't go it alone, but you can do it in partnership with a lot of different entities that now exist in the US healthcare landscape and are proving to be very successful in enabling smaller practices to grow, to develop the expertise to provide care in this way, and to manage their finances in such a way as to succeed in, for example, shared savings models.
Say, Keith, this is all well and good, but what if someone is looking for more clinical information?
Oh, then they want to check out our sister site, patientcareonline.com. the leading clinical resource for primary care physicians. Again, that's patientcareonline.com.
So the report also estimates that Medicare could save roughly $22 billion annually if traditional Medicare patients got the same kind of care as MA patients in at-risk arrangements. Could you talk about really what those providers are doing differently and how others can replicate that?
Absolutely. We've had a project underway at APG for several years now where we pooled a lot of the data of many of our existing practices that are in a particular type of Medicare Advantage arrangement. Medicare Advantage is not a monolith by any stretch of the imagination. And there are many different models of how these MA plans are organized, whether they're HMO models or preferred provider organization models, and in how they pay providers. For our groups, their preferred model is being in relationships with Medicare Advantage plans, where most of the risk is delegated over to our groups from the plans. So think about it. The plans get a per member per month, in effect, a capitated payment from the government, and then they turn around, they keep a share of it, but they basically funnel the rest of it over to our groups. And that means our groups are capitated for caring for their MA patients, and they take on the risk, the two-sided risk of caring for the beneficiaries. In those arrangements, we have demonstrated optimal results for patients because our groups do two things. First of all, the physicians develop the expertise to operate in this model. They get a sense of what care they need to perform for patients in the given envelope of funding that they get. And they just develop a better sense of what you need to do to keep patients as healthy as possible and out of the hospital. They're also able to build the infrastructure to do that. And what do I mean by infrastructure? That can be anything from, first of all, having state-of-the-art electronic health records and very good analytics to be able to monitor what's going on with patients, so through registries, et cetera. They also are able to create teams around themselves of people that you just cannot have unless you've got the resources to hire them. So MSWs to help with patient social needs, pharmacists on the staff to help with medication issues, the ability to refer patients out to other social services as they may need, connect them with sources of healthy food if that's what they need. It's a whole big infrastructure that you simply cannot finance today if you're billing Medicare on a fee-for-service basis. You have to have the additional resources, and the way you get that in Medicare Advantage is through risk-adjusted payments that are at the heart of a lot of the payment issues in the MA program. There are downsides to risk adjustment, but the upside is it channels resources to practices to give them the ability to do these things that they would not have otherwise. And with all of that in place, we have been able to show you can keep patients out of the hospital, you can prevent unnecessary readmissions, you can keep them much more adherent to their needed medications, and any of a number of outcomes that clearly show that if these were able to be achieved in the traditional Medicare program, we would, as we've estimated, save at least $22 billion a year.
So MA or Medicare Advantage, it keeps growing. But alongside that, you know, so do frustrations with prior authorizations, star ratings. What is your vision for improving MA while preserving its popularity?
Well, MA is popular. It's now 37.5 million enrollees. 56% of all of those eligible to sign up for MA in Medicare, which means you have to be in both Medicare Part A and Part B. 56% now in MA relative to who's left in the traditional program. So, and of course, most of the estimates project that will continue grow up toward 60% in future years. So it's going to become a bigger and bigger share of the program. There are issues with MA, undoubtedly, as we mentioned in our report, and as you've just mentioned as well. Prior authorization is a big one. We're very gratified that just yesterday, about 60 health insurance plans came forward and said that they also agree there have to be innumerable changes in prior authorization to shore up confidence in the program and actually make it much more seamless for everybody involved, for providers, for beneficiaries in particular, and even for the payers themselves. So that has to be part and parcel of a set of changes that are made in the coming years. And of course, the health insurers have put themselves on a two-year timeline to get this done. And as groups like us, which also undertake our own prior authorization, when we're particularly in these delegated relationships with MA plans, we know it can be done better than it generally is done for most of the system. So we're committed to making that happen. And we're gratified, as I say, that many of the health insurers are now as well. Star ratings are also an issue. We think, first of all, star ratings should reward plans that organize themselves to pay providers the way many plans pay us in these two-sided risk models, because as I say, we think we get better results that way. So that would be one big improvement to star ratings if CMS actually used those to reward plans in that way. But for the balance of a lot of star ratings, much of the weight of star ratings is still attached to process measures, which often deal with the way plans are run. We think more of those measures really do need to relate back to health outcomes for beneficiaries. That's what really matters here. So we're very interested in seeing over time CMS move to more of these outcomes measures, and frankly, a smaller list of really useful measures as opposed to multiple measures that don't always really matter is our preferred way to go. And we think those changes are doable.
Great. So also part of the report, it supports giving traditional Medicare patients access to dental, vision, hearing coverage, but only if they join accountable care models. Could you talk a little bit about how that would work? Would seniors go for it?
We think they would. We don't know that it's generally well understood, particularly for people who are signing up for Medicare for the first time. You know, most people today, if they've got insurance coverage, they've got employer-based coverage. Very often, it's a relatively easy process to not only opt into a health insurance plan, but also pick your dental, your vision, et cetera. And it can be a rude shock to be eligible for Medicare and figure out that now you're kind of on your own. You've got to decide, you've got to pick your own Part D plan, your prescription drug plan. You've got to go out and find a dental plan on your own. You've got to find a vision plan on your own, et cetera. And you've got to pay for that. Oh, and by the way, you probably are also going to have to buy Medigap insurance to plug all the loopholes that still exist in the traditional Medicare benefit structure. And most people don't recognize that the costs of Medigap can be fairly high. We published a report in April called Sticker Shock. It's available on our website that shows that depending on your health status and depending on where you are in the country, because these rates vary around the country, you can pay a difference of $1,800 or $3,800 a year for your Medigap plan. So all in, paying your Medicare premiums, you're paying a premium for your Part D plan, you're buying all of this other coverage separately, and you're buying a Medicaid plan, those costs can be quite substantial. So if we said instead to beneficiaries, you know what, if you agree to come in, voluntarily sign on with, for example, an ACO, pick a primary care doctor, stick with the primary care doctor, agree that the primary care team is going to coordinate your care, agree that you're going to go to the specialists they think are the best ones for you to see and the hospitals they think are the best ones for you to use. If if that was the deal, and in exchange for all of that, you also got dental and vision and hearing coverage rolled in, we think a lot of people would go for it, particularly if they are fully aware of all the challenges and all the costs of staying in traditional Medicare and putting together this smorgasbord of other benefits that you may need. It would have to be phased in over time. And frankly, it would take a commitment on the part of policymakers to say, we're willing to spend more on this for a while in the interest over time, getting to a much more accountable system where we keep people healthier, out of the hospital, and save money on the back end. So that's a tall order for this kind of a policy process that we're in right now, but we think it would be very important, and we think lots of beneficiaries would say yes.
Oh, you say you're a practice leader or administrator? We've got just the thing. Our sister site, physicianspractice.com, your one-stop shop for all the expert tips and tricks that will get your practice really humming. Again, that's physicianspractice.com.
So for the rest of 2025, I mean, if Congress could only act on one Medicare policy, what's the change that would help the most practices and their patients thrive?
Well, since we're already just about halfway through 2025 and Congress has a limited number of legislative days left even in this year, I'll pick a really simple one. Which is really starts to get at the nub of some of the other broad issues that we face in this country with respect to healthcare. The simple change would be take the Medicare physician fee schedule, which is, of course, the way most of Medicare pays, and update it for at least a meaningful portion of practice cost inflation for the first time, and keep that update in place forever. As I know many people who listen to this podcast know, Medicare physician fees in inflation-adjusted terms have fallen by close to half over the last 20-plus years. They have not been adjusted in tandem with the increased practice costs that almost all clinicians have faced, which means payment in real terms has been declining. And the Medicare trustees have now said for 3 years straight that if Medicare payment for physicians is not adjusted, over time, Medicare beneficiaries will lose access to physicians. Physicians and others will leave the Medicare program. And not only will beneficiaries face access, they will see lower quality of care, particularly relative to what is available to people whose insurance remains in the commercial market where payment levels are much higher. So we're facing this problem. We're up against a workforce shortage. The leading edge of the baby boom is about to turn 80. We have a lot of older adults with enormous care needs, and we are not doing what we need to do to keep a robust physician practice alive and well and able to care for beneficiaries. So that one change would be extraordinarily helpful. And then we can go on and deal with all the other things I mentioned, like restoring the advanced alternative payment model bonuses, getting rid of MACRA, reauthorizing MACRA under a new form, and really pushing the system much more to accountability over the next decade.
Is there anything else that I might have missed in my questions or anything else that you want to highlight from the report?
I would just come back to helping to foster a greater understanding of Medicare Advantage in particular. It is often an eye-opener to people who don't know much about Medicare Advantage to understand, first of all, that it's not monolithic. As I said earlier, there are lots of different ways MA plans are organized across the country. There are lots of different ways in which they pay providers. We have many providers who are paid on a conventional fee-for-service basis by MA plans. And they're as irritated about many things going on in the MA world as anybody, particularly prior authorization and rates of denials that often seem exceptionally high. And they don't always understand why care is being denied. And certainly if they don't understand it, patients don't understand that either. it needs to be understood that that is not a given, that MA has to operate that way. And so understanding that there are models of MA that work much better, as I said earlier, we believe that the models in which we work with many of our plans in these so-called delegated relationships, where the plans and providers really become partners together, produce much, much better results. We've now documented that in several of our studies. So basically, enhancing everybody's understanding of this differential that already exists in the MA world, stopping with demonizing a lot of the aspects of the program that we think are really important, like risk adjustment. If you read a lot of the stories in the press, risk adjustment is just a way that health plans fraudulently upcode diagnoses of individuals in order to get more money. That's one way to look at it. Another way to look at it is no, this whole system was structured to give practices the resources to invest in the kinds of capabilities that I described earlier to actually deliver better care to beneficiaries and the kind of care that you cannot finance right now if you're just in the Medicare fee-for-service system. So we would love it if, on the basis of our report and other things that people can read, they developed a fuller understanding of why we can make this model better. But why the model in many instances now is better for many beneficiaries. And we've got to build on the aspects of it that are better and get more of the program to look like these optimal instances where there are these provider plan partnerships that really do drive to optimal care.
Great. And again, we will have the full report linked in the show notes down below, so listeners are able to flip through it and really check it out for themselves. Susan Dentzer, thank you again so much for taking the time today.
Delighted to be with you. Thanks again.
Once again, you just heard from Susan Dentzer, the president and CEO of America's Physician Groups, about their latest report, Medicare Done Right, which you can find linked in the show notes down below. My name is Alston Luttrell, and on behalf of the whole medical economics and physicians practice teams, I'd like to thank you for listening to the show and ask that you please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss the next episode. Also, if you'd like the best stories that medical economics and physicians practice publish delivered straight to your email 6 days of the week, subscribe to our newsletters at medicaleconomics.com and physicianspractice.com. Off the Chart, a Business and Medicine podcast, is executive produced by Chris Mazzolini and Keith Reynolds and produced by Alston Luttrell. Medical Economics, Physicians Practice, and Patient Care Online are all members of the MJH Life Sciences family. Thank you.